And Radio Derb is on the air. Welcome to the show, listeners. This is, of course, your proudly genial host, John Derbyshire, bringing you the week's news here in the afterglow of Thursday's July 4th celebration. I hope you enjoyed your July 4th as much as the Derbs enjoyed ours. You should, in fact, enjoy the 4th each year now with special zest, in the knowledge that it may not be a public holiday much longer. Our cultural revolution advances ever faster. Let me show you. Yes, just this week we have seen a couple of major strides in that advance. First, we have learned that the 13-star Betsy Ross flag is an emblem of fascism because of, as originally explained to us, quote, because of its connection to an era of slavery, end quote. The logic on this one was hard to follow. Is it the 13 stars representing the original 13 colonies, in all of which, I think, slavery was legal at the time Ms. Ross offered her flag design? If it was, then the 13 stripes must be equally offensive. That could be... what's the cant word here? Oh yes, problematic. That could be problematic to a great many not yet fully woke Americans, as our present national flag retains those same 13 stripes. The issue got further confused when diehard counter-revolutionary subversives noted that the Betsy Ross flag was prominently displayed at Barack Obama's second inaugural bash. Since it is inconceivable that Saint Barack himself was not fully woke to the shameful associations of the flag, a new justification for the ban had to be thought up. It quickly was. The Betsy Ross flag, we are now told, has been appropriated by white supremacists as a symbol of their deplorable movement. I must say, I wasn't aware of this. I have never seen the Betsy Ross flag on display at meetings of my own local white supremacy group, SCARF. That's the Suffolk County Assembly of Racists and Fascists. But perhaps we're just behind the curve out here in the sticks. This logical switch illustrates the nimbleness of the cultural revolutionaries. In the fullness of time, they will no doubt declare that, yes, the current national flag is indeed unacceptable. They know, however, that the time is not yet right for a full-scale assault against all our national symbols. They need to proceed methodically, step by step, until the moment is right to storm the Winter Palace. The other revolutionary step forward this week came in news that the city of Charlottesville, Virginia, will no longer celebrate Thomas Jefferson's birthday as an official city holiday. Charlottesville is the home of the University of Virginia, which Jefferson founded. And it's also the home of Jefferson's Monticello estate. If we continue along this path, it can only be a matter of time, and not much time given the accelerating pace of the past few years, it can only be a matter of time until George Washington himself is expunged from the nation's memory, as President Trump foresaw in his speech following the 2017 Antifa riot in Charlottesville. Several people have pointed out that the name of our capital city is doubly outrageous to the legions of the woke, commemorating as it does not only slave owner George, but also in the DC part, Christopher Columbus, who caused West Indian Aborigines to be enslaved. The name Washington, D.C. must soon, therefore, be dragged down into oblivion, along with Old Glory. If, at that point, we are still celebrating July the 4th, you can be sure it will be the next item on the revolutionaries' list. Who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past. In my June 21st podcast, I mentioned the fact that back in Cold War days, the word peace in the name of an organization was, yes, problematic. Quote from myself. Back in those dear lost days, if a college classmate or work colleague tried to get you to join some organization with the word peace in its title, you could be pretty sure it was a KGB front. End quote. Nowadays, the word pride dwells under a similar cloud of suspicion. Any time you hear about some organization or event with pride in its title, you can infer that it is a vehicle for the promotion of buggery. Steve Saylor has mused that when the younger generation today learns about the 1942 Gary Cooper movie, Pride of the Yankees, their first reaction is probably, "Hey, I didn't know Lou Gehrig was gay." For example, the week prior to this last one was Pride Week in New York City, with the word pride used in just that sense. Pride Week climaxed on Sunday, June 30th, in a huge parade of proud L's, G's, B's, T's and Q's down Fifth Avenue. Thus primed, I think I may be forgiven for having misapprehended a headline that I saw in Wednesday's Drudge Report. Headline: American Pride Hits New Low. Uh-oh, I thought. What have the homo lobbies been up to now? On investigation, it turned out that the news report had nothing to do with eccentric sexual inclinations. That headline was actually taken from a new press release out of Gallup, the very respectable polling organization. Opening quote. As Americans prepare to celebrate the 4th of July holiday, their pride in the U.S. has hit its lowest point since Gallup's first measurement in 2001. While 70% of U.S. adults overall say they are proud to be Americans, this includes fewer than half, 45%, who are extremely proud, marking the second consecutive year that this reading is below the majority level. Democrats continue to lag far behind Republicans in expressing extreme pride in the U.S. End quote. Breaking down their poll results into particular things we are or are not proud of, the two things inspiring the most pride in us are American scientific achievements and the US military. At the other end, we are least proud of the American political system and the American health and welfare systems. Not much argument from me on that. Some, but not much. With the 50th anniversary of the first moon landing coming up, it would be curmudgeonly in the extreme to deny our nation's wonderful scientific achievements. Likewise, as the parent of a well-mannered and busy young American gentleman who, prior to serving 4 years in the US Army, was an obnoxious and refractory teenager, you won't hear anything but praise for the US military out of my mouth. I'll take somewhat more issue with the items at the other end of Gallup's pride spectrum. I don't actually think there is much wrong with our political system. That it's not working very well right now is mainly a result of our not using the mechanisms it offers us. The overweening arrogance of our judiciary, for example, could be cured by a few salutary impeachments, as provided for in our national and state constitutions. But we seem to have given up on impeaching judges. I'm not really in any position to complain about the health and welfare systems, from both of which I benefit. But I will once again register my long-standing conviction, as an abstract matter of social policy, that yoking health insurance to employment is a really seriously dumb idea. It got underway as a wartime emergency kludge in World War II, and somehow we're still stuck with it 74 years later. As if we were still hanging on to our wartime issue gas coupons. Going back to that opening paragraph, the eye-catching sentence is the one at the end. Quote, Democrats continue to lag far behind Republicans in expressing extreme pride in the US, end quote. The actual percentages expressing themselves extremely proud to be American are Republicans 76, Democrats 22. That's a heck of a gap, 54 percentage points. In 2001 it was 10 points, 64 to 54. Here's my question for Democrats. The biggest issue in our politics right now arises from the fact that millions, tens of millions, likely hundreds of millions of foreigners want to come and settle in America, with or without proper permission. Isn't that an occasion for pride? If I held a house party and half the town tried to gatecrash it, I would be very seriously apprehensive, knowing how that kind of situation generally ends. At the same time, though, I should not be able to suppress a frisson of pride that it was my party everyone wanted to attend. The 17 Americans nationwide who take an interest in women's soccer had an occasion for pride this week when the US team beat England 2-1 in the semi-final of the World Cup being played in France. Holland beat Sweden the following evening, so our ladies meet Hollands in the final on Sunday. One of our ladies, Alex Morgan, celebrated the victory over England by performing a little mime, supposed to be of drinking a cup of tea with her pinky sticking out. I had to read the explanation of what she was miming, as it wasn't obvious to me. It looked to me, in fact, as though she was puffing on a joint. Once it had been explained, I got a smile out of it. Not for the reason Ms. Morgan intended, but a smile at the quaint way our national stereotypes persist for decades after they've ceased to have any connection to reality. English people drink tea with their pinkies like this. Well, my parents did drink lots of tea, but they were both born over 100 years ago, and neither of them did the pinky thing. It would be like me mocking Americans by miming a 3-martini lunch, if that was a thing you could mime. What would Alex Morgan have mimed if her team had beaten Italy? Twirling an imaginary waxed moustache? If it had been Germany, would she have snapped to attention and clicked her heels? France? An exaggerated pout and a shrug? Quaint. My previous segment is relevant here in both its aspects. I'm anti-soccer in a general way, and the less I know about women's soccer, the happier I shall be. I did somehow notice, though, that on June 11th, our gals beat Thailand's team 13-0. Now, I used to live in Thailand, and that experience left me with a strong conviction that Thai women are, in the generality, very feminine. A team that beats them 13-0 is likely way over on the other side of the hormonal ledger. One is bound to suspect that the victorious team there has, as nicely as I can put it, more pride. Perhaps not entirely. Ms. Morgan is married to an Andro-American, also a soccer player. And she is so indisputably feminine, she has appeared in the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. Twice. I only note in passing, without comment, that her home team is called the Orlando Pride. The US team co-captain, however, name of Megan Rapinoe, is an open... Oh, I'm sorry. I mean to say, of course, a proud lesbian. Likewise, her teammate, Ali Krieger, who also plays for Orlando Pride. Is there, in point of fact, more than one professional women's soccer team in the USA? Don't know, don't care. And on the other theme of my previous segment, while I cannot speak directly to how proud these ladies are of being Americans, there is not much doubt which way they vote. Our president made it known that if this ladies' team wins the World Cup, he will invite them to the White House. On hearing this, Ms. Rapinoe told an interviewer from a soccer magazine that, quote, "Pshish, I'm not going to the f***ing White House," end quote. Ms. Krieger likewise. Following the fuss over Ms. Rapinoe's response, Ms. Krieger tweeted proudly that, tweet, "I don't support this administration, nor their fight against LGBTQ plus citizens, immigrants, and our most vulnerable," end tweet. Speaking as an immigrant, married to another immigrant, I confess we did not know that the administration is fighting against us. Now that Ms. Krieger has alerted us to it, we'll be on the lookout for FBI agents tracking our movements and riffling through our trash cans. Just a word to Ms. Morgan and her teammates. Be careful who you mock. I have had some close personal acquaintances with English soccer hooligans in quantity. Suffice it to say that in a battle between English soccer hooligans and the horde of Attila, my money would be on England. Those hooligans were male. I don't know if there are any female soccer hooligans over there. If there are, though, and they're anything like their brothers, then as loaded up with testosterone as you and your team obviously are, you could be in a world of hurt. The proudest of our current Democratic presidential candidates is, of course, Peter Buttigieg, mayor of South Bend, Indiana. Reporting on the candidate debates last week, I gave credit to Mayor Buttigieg for, quote, his frankness and for his generally thoughtful demeanour, end quote. As usual, I was too darn nice. Thursday this week, at a campaign event in Iowa, the mayor got the following suggestion from an audience member, quote, Mayor Pete, there has been some controversy in South Bend between the police and the black community, and I have a solution for you, and I'd like you to make a comment on my proposal. Just tell the black people of South Bend to stop committing crime and doing drugs. End quote. Buttigieg replied thus. Slightly edited quote. The fact that a black person is four times as likely as a white person to be incarcerated for the exact same crime is evidence of systemic racism. Racism makes it harder for good police officers to do their jobs. It is a smear on law enforcement. When black people and white people are treated the same under the criminal justice system, it will be easier for white people and black people to live in this country, and it will be easier for law enforcement to do their jobs. End quote. Couple of problems with that. First problem, does anyone in his right mind really believe that a black person is four times as likely as a white person to be incarcerated for the exact same crime? Could the mayor or his staff provide some rigorous statistics to support that? Will some moderator at the next candidate's debate ask him for those statistics? Second problem. Matters of fact aside, the mayor's reply is, to put it as kindly as possible, not strong on internal logic. Whose racism makes it harder for good police officers to do their jobs? It can't be the good police officers. Racists are bad, not good. So, are there some bad racist police officers among the good ones? Not the odd outlier here and there, but enough to swing the balance of incarceration to a 4-to-1 imbalance? Wouldn't Mayor Buttigieg himself be committing a smear on law enforcement by suggesting that this is the case? Or is it the criminal justice system at large that's infected with systemic racism, not the police? Judges, prosecutors, and juries? Do the police think so? Do you mind if we ask them? Peter Buttigieg is not as swivel-eyed crazy as Cory Booker, nor as weirdly extraterrestrial as Beto O'Rourke, but he's a lightweight with a head full of untenable beliefs. I'm sorry I gave him even the teeny bit of credit I gave him. And a footnote here, just a word in response to listeners who called me inconsistent for objecting to Mayor Buttigieg's presenting himself to us by the kiddie diminutive Pete. While, at the same time, I accept O'Rourke's chosen diminutive, Beto. O'Rourke's forename is actually Robert. Beto is apparently some lame attempt to win the affections of Latino voters. Yes, I have to agree, I've been inconsistent. My excuse is that I was half inclined to take Buttigieg seriously, whereas I can't see how anyone could take O'Rourke seriously. Not taking the guy seriously, I couldn't be bothered to find out the provenance of Beto, which I vaguely supposed was some kind of actual name. I still don't quite see how you get from Robert to Beto. I mean, shouldn't it be Berto? But I still don't care. And now, our closing miscellany of brief items. Imprimis. I'm as shocked as anyone by the beating that intrepid freelance reporter Andy Ngo got from Antifa goons over in Portland, Oregon. It's not only the beating itself that shocks, it's the fact, in plain sight, that the far-left establishment of Portland, including the mayor and the police commissioner, are fine with Antifa controlling their city's streets. The best comment on this deplorable event was one that I spotted on a Twitter thread without making a note of its source. I'm sorry about that. The tweeter wondered why there is no such organisation as Anticom. Members dedicated to protesting violently with masks over their faces against any public expression of communist or anarchist activism. The kinds of activism that, once in power, generated mountains of corpses and deserts of cultural destruction all through the 20th century. It's not hard to figure out an answer to that. Just try to imagine a big city mayor giving the time of day to Anticom, or even just permitting them to exist. Item. Africans are on the move. Reports from Latin America say tens of thousands from across the Atlantic, a high proportion from Africa, are flying to Ecuador, which doesn't require visas for entry. And then they're moving up along the Central American Isthmus to Mexico and thence to the USA. Reuters, on July 5th, carried a story about one of them, a 23-year-old woman from Cameroon, 8 months pregnant. She's crossed 9 national borders and should be crossing the 10th from Mexico into the USA any day now. Get your wallet out, listener. You'll be paying for her delivery. Once again, I assert my primacy in having been the first, so far as I know, to sound the alarm on illegals from Africa gatecrashing our borders. That was the case of the catamaran with 14 young men from Senegal in it, picked up by the Coast Guard off Long Island back in 2007, and remarked on by Radio Derb 4 years later. I thought at the time I'd been tardy, noticing that event just 4 years later. In fact, I was ahead of the curve. Mass border jumping by Africans took 8 further years to mature. Now it's here. You heard about it first at Radio Derb. Item. A bit late with this one, but I thought it worth a notice. It concerns the Heritage Foundation, the folk who put the cuck in cuckservative. Heritage is best known to us on the dissident right for having handed over analyst Jason Richwine to the cult Marx lynch mob back in 2013. Well, on June 17th, Heritage published a longish discussion on YouTube. It's an hour and 10 minutes. I haven't listened to much of it yet. A friend just brought it to my attention this morning. The reason he brought it to my attention was its title, America's Cold Civil War. My friend, along with many other people, believes I coined that phrase earlier in this decade. Did I? I have no idea. Occasional attempts to find out have led nowhere. Engram, for instance, is unhelpful. There's no data later than 2008. I suppose I might have coined the phrase, and I will gladly take credit if it can be proved, but it's not a particularly original idea, and anyone might have come up with it. I did notice, though, that the first speaker in this Heritage video, at 6 minutes 15 seconds into the show, mentions Cecil the Lion. Anyone remember Cecil the Lion? This was the celebrity lion in Zimbabwe shot back in 2015 by a dentist from Minnesota on a hunting vacation, to the outrage of good thinkful people everywhere. I wrote up the whole affair here at vdare.com under the headline Cecil the Lion and the Good White, Bad White Cold Civil War. Do you get it? That speaker at the Heritage event, it was Michael Anton, the Flight 93 election guy. Michael had Googled the term Cold Civil War, come up with my article, and borrowed from it. Either that, or he'd read it at the time and just remembered it. I'm flattered either way, Michael. I'd be even happier, though, and it would, to be blunt, it would be a tad more honest on your part to get an on-air credit for my work. Item. 2 years ago, Saturday, June 3rd, 2017, there was a terrorist outrage in London. Late that evening, three crazy Muslims drove their van into a crowd of people on London Bridge. Then they left the van and went from building to building, stabbing people at random, killing seven. Eventually, they came to a pub, where a middle-aged gent named Roy Lana was drinking with his buddies. Quote from him. They had these long knives and started shouting about Allah. Then it was Islam, Islam, Islam. Like an idiot, I shouted back at them. I took a few steps towards them and said, "Fuck you. I'm Millwall." End quote. Millwall is a London soccer team, famous for the street-fighting ferocity of its supporters. Did you think I was kidding about English soccer hooligans? Mr. Lana took on the knife-wielding jihadis with his bare fists, sustaining serious stab wounds all over his body, but allowing dozens of other patrons of the pub to escape. Quote from the Daily Caller. Lana has now been added to a terrorist watch list known as Britain's Prevent Programme after fears that he could become an anti-Islam extremist. End quote. It's trite to say it, but I'll say it anyway. You can't make this stuff up. Item. One more from Cuck Island. Sorry, but it's a treasure house of multicultural insanity over there. A primary school in South London, a primary school mind, has suspended two 10-year-old students for homophobia. The principal of the school, name of Susan Pappas, is an aggressive lesbian. She nonetheless acquired a daughter somehow, and her daughter, also a lesbian, is the school manager, whatever that means. For a full trifecta, we are told that the school's assistant principal is a homosexual male. It seems that both the suspended children are black, from Christian families, one of them Jamaican and one West African. One has been transferred to a different school. I'm not clear about the status of the other. I hope the three homosexuals in charge of this school are proud of themselves. Wait a minute. Of course they are. That's it, ladies and gents. Thank you for listening, and I hope your celebration of the 4th was as much fun as ours. We had no fewer than 9 guests on our little suburban deck here, on a glorious warm day. Then, as darkness fell, we enjoyed a sensational fireworks display put on by a local country club. A perfect 4th. An ingenious musical friend, employing some very ingenious software, has turned my signature music from Haydn's Derbyshire Marches into a tango. I think it's rather nifty, and I shall try to get my local Arthur Murray studio to produce a video of a couple actually dancing it. There will be more from Radio Derb next week.